simply by being more efficient. And I have to stress, without lowering the quality of the equipment or the services we were providing. I think it shows that we want to be good stewards of the resources that are given to us.
If there are further cuts to the budget, for example, there's been talk that the United States is looking to cut some of its contributions to the UN. If there were to be further cuts, how would this affect
the
department?
Well, I of course note that it is for the Security Council, you know, to decide on our mandate and then on our ceilings of staffing. We will have to stress that in some circumstances, reductions might have operational consequences on the ground. But, you know, we will remain, as ever, in very close touch with all the member states of the Council, and further down the road, of course, with the Fifth Committee and the SABQ.
You've touted the technological advances that are helping to improve the work of peacekeepers on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us some examples?
Of course, the obvious one is the UAVs, which are now becoming standard in most of our operations, both the big drones, the smaller ones, but I do stress surveillance drones, of course, not tactical machines. But it's also about getting detection radars for weapon attacks. It's about tethered balloons, you know, to watch over a city like Bangui with cameras and thermal sensors, which really allow us to see what is happening.
If you look at all the conflicts that are taking place on the ground, it seems that the peacekeeping operations have had to stretch a bit to be able to accommodate all these crises. What's it been like?
Stretch, yes, of course, but at a time when, you know, we had 2 years ago the peacekeeping summit that translated into many offers by contributors of troops and police, both old and newer ones, you know. We've had to operationalize these offers, and now we reached a point where we'll have the capacity to deploy a vanguard brigade within 30 to 60 days, which simply was impossible only 2 years ago. So stretch, I'm not sure, is really the word. The problem, though, has to do with the enablers and with the equipment of certain units, and we are constantly working with those countries to help and improve. We're trying to be creative and to address those issues in the most effective way.
DPK has managed to get more recruits from the global north compared to the global south, which has been contributing more troops over the years, but women are still underrepresented. And why is that?
Well, I think this one was one of the subjects on which I worked a lot over these 5 years, because it seemed to me that the situation was unfair. The burden was not shared equally. We haven't reached a point where we can say the job is done, but certainly there has been a trend. And when we look at the mission in Mali, MINUSMA, you have no less than 17 European countries, European Union countries, who are represented by staff, personnel in that mission. In the Central African Republic, I have not forgotten that it was the European as such that came to provide the sort of buffering between the African Union and the full deployment of the UN troops. So I think this is something that has to be encouraged, because 10 years ago, many of those countries were heavily involved in Afghanistan. Now that, of course, has disappeared essentially from the screens. And I think they came to realize that coming back to peacekeeping in the UN context is something that is desirable.
Your department has also been trying to increase the participation of women in peacekeeping operations.
That is true. And of course, we haven't made as much progress as I would have wished. But of course, you have to be aware that the sociology of the armies of the main countries of the world is not a very feminine one. So we can hardly be expected to do much better than the member states who provide us the personnel. We are doing rather a little better for police. We stand, I think, right now at 12%. And the goal is that we may reach 20% which I think we may be able to do. Also, I have set a goal for military officers, staff officers, to get also 20% of female officers as soon as possible. But it requires a lot of work and, of course, the active cooperation of those countries who contribute troops and police.
It must have been frustrating for your department in cases where there is no peace to keep. For example, in Mali,
in
South Sudan,
exactly.
It happened.
That's true, and I was in South Sudan last week, and this is it's the same. You see, this has been a trend that the Security Council gives us mandates, but in contexts which are not exactly those that we would hope to find. So, of course, one of the permanent goals is for those missions, and it's been certainly the case in Mali, it is the case presently in South Sudan. We try to support those in particular countries of the region who try to engineer a peace agreement, you know, and of course implementing those agreements then becomes our responsibility. But there have been some very delicate transitions and, of course, situations which exposed our people to greater risk, obviously. I haven't forgotten the short-lived supervision mission that we dispatched to Syria in 2012. After 4 months, we concluded that this was not for us, definitely. There was no peace, nor was there any hope at the time of seeing a process developing.
The issue of sexual exploitation and abuse by UN staff in countries like CAR, DRC, Haiti, just to name a few, made big splashes in the news and tainted the name of peacekeepers, although it is a system-wide problem. Do you feel that DPKL handled this issue correctly, and is it on the right path to rid itself of this scourge?
I think we have always taken this very seriously. The new Secretary General has put even more emphasis by putting out this plan of action, which builds and prolongs a number of things which we had already done. I think it is absolutely a necessity. It's a shame that a few people, you know, smear the reputation of the vast majority of the peacekeepers. And of course, we should not forget that the member states who contribute, the troops and police, have to do their share. It's not only the responsibility of the Secretariat.